Hello, good morning. My name is Edmund Tena Nulochu. This is Laudio. Today we are treating public international law, and we are looking at the sources of law vis-a-vis Article 38(1) of the statute of the ICJ. We have treated international conventions and customary international law. Now let's go to general principles of law recognized or practiced by civilized states. Now, this refers to the principles of law of some civilized nations, which are generally accepted and applied to the world at large. So there are basic principles or rules of law which can basically be found in almost every legal system, and hence international courts and tribunals are allowed to apply them when it becomes necessary. The ICJ in the Corfu Channel case, when referring to substantial evidence, pointed out that it said, and I quote, "This indirect evidence is admitted in all systems of law and its use is recognized by international decisions." That is in relation to general principles of law in the Corfu Channel case as opined by the ICJ. Now, in the Sea Land Service Incorporated and Iran case, it was stated that the concept of unjust enrichment is widely accepted as having been assimilated into the catalog of general principles of law available to be applied by international tribunals. So other examples of such principles include estoppel per res judicata, estoppel passive acquiescence, the principle of acting in good faith, etc. Now, however, not all principles have been accepted to have acquired the status of being a general principle. Now, in the Southwest Africa case, Ethiopia and Liberia brought a case against South Africa regarding Southwest Africa, which is now called Namibia. Now, Southwest Africa was a mandatory province of South Africa during the times of the League of Nations. So South Africa was given a mandate over Southwest Africa, which is now Namibia, during the time of the League of Nations. Now, after the League of Nations, we had the United Nations, and still South Africa was exerting its mandate over Southwest Africa. Now, Ethiopia and Liberia came into the matter and brought an action against Southwest Africa for the court to determine whether or not South Africa still had a mandate to exact its authority on Southwest Africa. Now, The general principle of law espoused by Ethiopia and Liberia was actio popularis. Now, actio popularis is the principle that a member of a community may bring a matter in public interest against a situation that it's not even affected by. So actio popularis is this: I'm part of a community, and then a dispute has occurred. So I'm part of maybe ECOWAS. Ghana is part of ECOWAS, and maybe Togo and Nigeria are fighting. Then Ghana steps into the fray. Actio popularis enjoins Ghana to be able to bring an action against maybe a disputing party. So even though you are not even a third party, you are not party to the dispute, you may bring an action, you know, for public interest sake, you know. So what happened in that case was that the ICJ said the actual popularis was known only to certain legal systems and was not a general principle of law, and so it could not be accepted as a general principle of law as practiced by civilized states. So also in the Texaco case, the ICJ were of the opinion that the French law of administrative contracts lacked sufficient acceptance in other legal systems, hence cannot be granted as general principle of law. Now, there are many principles of law, including equity, equity, good faith, and others. Now, equity is one of the most important aspects of English law, and it's used by the international courts and tribunals where it's necessary. So Article 38.2 of the ICJ statute permits parties to a dispute to agree for their disputes to be settled solely on equity by setting aside the necessary law, which is custom or treaty, that may be applicable to the issue. So, however, the condition is that both parties must agree to that that term, that equity will be used instead of custom or treaty. Now, other sources of public international law as espoused by Article 38.1 of the Statute of the ICJ is judicial decisions. Now, judicial decisions under international law may not be a source of law per se, since the ICJ has no authority to make laws which bind states. Article 59 of the ICJ statute makes it clear that the decision of the court has no binding force except between the parties and in respect of that particular case. Now, judicial decisions can best be described as a law determining agency and not a law creating body. Again, the doctrine of judicial precedence is not applied in its strict sense at the international level. The ICJ is not bound by its previous decision. Neither is other court or any tribunal bound by the decision of the ICJ. But the ICJ over the years finds it right to follow its previous decisions and also tries to distinguish when necessary. Distinguishing means that they distinguish the facts. If there's the facts are similar, then they follow, but if not, they do not. Also, other courts and tribunals find the need to apply the decision of the ICJ in their decisions when necessary. So, statutes tend to behave in a manner consistent with the decision of the ICJ. Certain statutes of states tend to behave in a manner which follows the decision of the ICJ. And when they continuously do this, then it becomes some sort of practice and then transmogrifies into customary international law. The last bit of the sources of public international law is legalistic writings of the most respected writers in a country. Now, 38.1D of the Statute of the ICJ, it regards writings of highly qualified publicists as a source of international law. Undoubtedly, writers contributed to the development of international law, but it can only influence the practice of states, so they become customs. So writers like Grotius and Vattel and others contributed to the development of international law. But legalistic writings in this modern era cannot be considered as law per se, but they can be considered as more of evidence of international law. And so it cannot sway a state to be bound by the writing of a publicist. It cannot. So the impact of writers have reduced over the years, probably because of the work of the International Law Commission, which was instituted by the UN General Assembly in 1947 in order to promote the progressive development of international law and codify it, the International Law Commission. Now, the work of the International Law Commission also can be seen as some sort of subsidiary means of determining law. It's a law determining agency somewhat. So the International Law Commission is made up of about 34 members from Asia, Africa, America, and Europe, and their term of office is 5 years. Okay, so they usually would decide upon a topic, make a draft of the topic, and submit to all the member states, which will give their comment, and then they will usually organize a conference, a United Nations conference, and then what usually comes out of it is either treaties or some sort of international agreement. Now, resolutions of the General Assembly are also some sort of law-determining agency, even though they can never be binding. But when states continuously vote against or in favor of a particular act, then it becomes binding because it develops into some sort of custom. So they adopt it, okay? So another importance of the General Assembly resolution is that it helps to prove the opinio iuris of certain states concerning the agreement to a particular practice as international law. For example, is the Nicaragua case. Now, in the Nicaragua case, the United States intervened in between the Sandinistas and the Contras in Nicaragua. What they did was, first, they supported the Sandinistas to overthrow the sitting government, and then when they saw that the Sandinistas were supporting some militants in El Salvador, they turned and, you know, they turned against the Sandinistas and gave support to the Contras. Now, the Contras, they supported with money and artillery. And then the United States went on to the port of Nicaragua and were fighting. Now, Nicaragua brought an action in 1984 against the United Nations, against the United States, asking the ICJ to force or to mandate the United States to leave its ports and harbors and to rule against its use of force in Nicaragua. Right. So we have finished the sources of international law. We'll now go on to the subjects of international law in the next podcast. See you.